comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome, everybody. Episode number 38 of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, and, of course, jitterymonkey.com. And in episode 38, I'm visiting with my longtime friend, a radio broadcast partner, and he has not one but two shows because he's an overachiever here on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. He is the host of Gamer and one of three legs of the proverbial tripod with his good friend Zach and his wife Sierra on the Popped Culture Podcast. So everybody, welcome into the Nerd Dome, my good friend and buddy, longtime broadcast pal, Mr. Matthew Horst. Matt, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing well, Greg, doing well. The Nerd Dome's much bigger than I thought it would be.
There was a Tyrannosaurus Rex I had to get out of here. You know, I kept the oversized coin. I figured that was nice Art Deco piece.
Oh, yeah.
But and you know what I had to do? I had to get rid of some of the Batmobiles. I had to downsize just a little bit. Had too many.
Well, the man cave, or in this case, the Nerd Dome, can only fit so much. You know, I mean, really, come on.
What are you going to do? You've got eight Batmobiles, but you only have one Fantastic Four mobile, you know, and that breaks off into four individual pieces. It was really much about a space, you know, and how much usable space did I have left in the Nerd Dome is what it was all about. So,
well, of course. See, my wife is, you know, she's a nerd like us, and, well, if we can call ourselves, if that's a good title for us,
On Nerds United, it is a term of endearment.
See? There it is.
Yeah. Sierra, I know she's listening. Stop shaking your head and rolling your eyes, Sierra.
Yeah, she's like us. So, I, you know, my Nerd Dome, I got to find a cool name for it because I don't want to steal your thing.
Yeah, please.
Is the whole
patent pending
apartment.
The whole, oh, so you have the entire estate, the entire Baxter building, if you will.
Well, you know it's a thing whenever I have comic books literally sitting on our table, and we can't even sit there to eat, you know, because it's covered in comic books. That there is the mecca of nerddom, I think, at least for me.
I have comic books all over my house to the point where I can't keep track of. I'm so far behind on reading my monthly polls that I'm fairly certain that somewhere in there I missed issue 32, but I can't find it. So I'm just going to plow through, and someday I'll get to organizing, and then I'll be like, oh, look, it's 32. And all right, now let me take 25 minutes to read this, completely forget the organizing, and that's going to get lost in the shuffle. We'll come back to that another time.
Well, that's my thing. You see, I went from single issues to trades now. So it's like I can condense them a lot easier, but I'm still getting really far behind. So
yeah.
You're not alone. You're not alone.
The trades that I have are less trades and more like volumes. And you know, people who've been listening to the show for a long time know I've been talking about, really, when it came to my mind in episode one, my chat with Van Jensen. Of course, that's the yearly June conversation with myself and the soon-to-be former writer for Green Lantern Corps, but luckily still sticking with DC and has been writing Flash since issue 30. So we'll visit again in June. But one of the names he dropped was Matt Kent. Matt, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's from St. Louis. And you know, writes for Dark Horse and really does a lot more than just that. But the title that Van dropped to me was Mind Management, Mind MGMT, and I've got the first volume at the house. I know exactly where it is. I just haven't had a chance to read it. Same with Mouse. There are a few others. It's just, I'll get to them. I'll get to them. I just don't know when.
Well, that's, you know, but I honestly, though, that's part of the beauty of comics in my mind, because there's been a few trades here or there or volumes, either or, you know, that I've set aside or put on the bookshelf that I didn't necessarily forget about them, but I just kind of, you know, I've been doing other things. And then I see it there and I'm thinking, wow, I might not have any money right now, but I have this book I can read and it never gets old. You know, it never goes stale. And that's what's kind of cool about it.
It is the beauty. Seeing it there, I mean, and now this is not a dig at libraries, but, you know, sometimes you got to take a movie back to, or a book back to the library, right? I mean, do they have, like, I know movies, depending on what movie store you go to, yes, you know, folks in the cities, movie stores still exist out here in the Great Plains regions. You know, if you get a new release, you got to take it back the next day. If you've got a older movie, you got 5 days, something like that. Is it like that? It's been so long since I've been to a library and actually check something out rather than just going for research. Do you have to take something and like bring it back in a set amount of time?
Well, yeah, I think that's how it is still. Well, and the only reason I believe that is because Sierra, if we haven't already established, that's my wife's name.
I think she did in the opening.
she reads novels. I don't read novels. You know, I'm just not a big novel guy. I respect them. There's been some good ones down the line.
Now, Matt, I think you're a novel individual.
well, we'll stop it. You know, thank you. I appreciate that. No, but she goes to the library often. You know, and I know that she has to have the books back in 14 days or something like that. So yeah, about 2 weeks.
All right, but if it's on your shelf, boom, you don't have to worry about it. Speaking of novels, and this ties in with a movie that's set to hit your store shelves at the end of the month, and that is The Hobbit: Battle of the Five Armies. I started it back in December in anticipation of watching the movie. My wife and I have seen all three Hobbit movies in the theaters right around New Year's, so I started it. I was like, I want to read this book before I, you know, see the movie that caps the series. That didn't happen, but I was able to finish it in the last week, and I gotta say, I know that there are other, like, appendices and things like that to The Hobbit story, but how do you take a 250-page book and spread it out over 8 to 9 hours worth of film? I will never understand Peter Jackson.
Well, you know, I've been writing a lot lately, and I've been thinking about, that's crossed my mind, especially with how big a book that is, and same thing with Jurassic Park, too. It was a huge book. But I can't imagine not only whittling it down to, like you said, what, 8 or 9 hours on film, but trying sitting there in that conference room or where whatever these writers are doing and thinking, you know, what am I going to put in? What do we leave out?
Well,
I can't imagine that.
It's for me, I don't want to say that I've studied the movies or anything like that, but there's so much more content in the movies than there is in the book, as far as, you know, all the details and things like that that they get into. You know, I'm sitting there as I'm reading the book, and I think this is why they say never watch a movie before you read the book if you want to read the book, because I'm reading the book, I'm like, that I don't remember that from the movie. they missed this entire portion in the book. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. What? See, I don't often read the book and then see the movie, or likewise. So
you
I don't
read the book.
Know that feeling, but I can't imagine. And I'm actually sitting here amazed, Greg, that you read The Hobbit. Wow. Well,
thank
not,
you.
Not saying I don't see you as a reader. You know. Wow.
One of the best and purest book to movie adaptations, to in my mind, still to this day, would have to be The Green Mile. Stephen King, you know, wrote it, of course, and it movie starred Tom Hanks and many others. I remember reading the book in school, in high school, oddly enough, checking it out from my school library at the time, and reading it, and then, you know, finally watching the movie, and I said, I think they nailed it as far as, you know, and of course, this was kind of the early age of what we would consider high quality special effects. I mean, this was late 90s, you know, CGI and things like that. And I said, yeah, that's pretty well how they described that in the book. So that's to me, again, one of the purest adaptations. And as we go on, Matt, in this conversation, we'll talk a lot more adaptations, but we've picked your brain a little bit, but we still have to learn who you are. I mentioned that you and I worked together at the same radio station for a number of years, you eventually seceded me in the afternoon show before going on. But let's learn about young Matt. Matt, when did you kind of begin your interest in comics?
Yeah, so my dad had a box of comics. I can't remember, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I can't remember if it was in... if he had it just in his man cave, I guess you would call it. I mean, my dad never had really a man cave, but he had a room that, you know, computers had. He did all his artwork and all that stuff in.
The older generation called it a den or a study.
Ooh, yes. The den.
The den.
He was sitting in the den.
On the veranda.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was the den or if he had it in a closet. And I used to remember... I remember a few specific comics. I don't know why he had this. He had a Jetsons comic, and it's so random. But
there are so many young people out now who don't even remember. They don't have any concept of what the Jetsons were.
Well, yeah, that's a disturbing thing. but the most important comic I remember was he had a G.I. Joe comic. And, you know, every little boy thinks G.I. Joes are cool. Army men are cool. And I remember seeing that. And I didn't necessarily read it, but I looked at the art and it just kind of stayed in my brain. And, you know, I remember that book for years and years. And actually what's funny, about 2 months ago, my dad handed me this bag and he said, here, these are for you. I'm going to throw them out, but if you want them, you can have them. Opened it up. There's that G.I. Joe comic. There's that Jetsons comic.
Full
so now
circle.
I have those in a bag with all my other comics, and I'm super stoked about that, just to have that memory, you know.
Got
to
get them bagged and boarded, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. And it, you know, so that leads me to now, and about a year and a half ago, I guess it's been now, my wife and I moved, we went off to school to get a degree, and we found a local comic shop here, thanks to you.
Hey, you can name drop. I've been there. I've visited with them. You can name drop. It's okay.
Yeah, so we're in Edwardsville, Illinois, and Heroic Adventures is the name of the comic shop. I mean, I'm not just saying this, probably one of the premier comic shops in the area, along with, I know you go to a shop in Fairview, or it's in Fairview Heights, right?
Yeah, I go Shiloh, the Greenmount Crossing,
Shiloh, yeah.
Twilight Comics, while we're name dropping. Hi, Brian. Hi, Tim. Hi, everybody. Sorry.
Yeah, so I love the comic shop atmosphere, and I remember we walked in, and I was just... I was awestruck, you know, being a nerd. there's nothing like going into a comic book shop. I say that all the time. There really is nothing like it. And I got the bug. I got the bug back. And I hadn't read comics in years. And so I got the bug. And now I'm going in the shop literally once a day, probably.
It's one of those things. I mean, I think to a lot of the casual observers or you know, maybe the people on the outside looking in at the geek culture, the comic culture, they probably think like, oh, you go into one comic book shop, you know, you've seen one, you've seen them all type of thing. I've been in Twilight, and I've been in Heroic, and I've been in comic book shops from Dallas, Texas to Spokane, Washington, Lincoln, Nebraska. everybody's, you know, yeah, sure, they're all going to have the latest issue of Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, etc., but they all kind of do their own little thing, their own little way, and it's those little differences. You might find a store that's heavy on tabletop gaming. You might find a store that's heavy on Magic the Gathering. You might find, like I did at in Lincoln, Nebraska, at the Haymarket Park. And right now, the name of the store escapes me, and I feel bad because it was a really good store. All they had were comics. They didn't have action figures. They didn't have T-shirts or hats or any of that other apparel, just comics. But you go down to Titan Comics, which is where I was in Dallas back in February. A lot of comics, but so many action figures. So everybody, I mean, yeah, you're going to find it that they're all going to have the latest issues, trade paperbacks, things like that. But they're all going to kind of specialize in their own other little variant things. And it's really unique. And that's why in all of my future travels, I kind of got the bug, similar to you. If I'm in a new city, new area, I'm going to check out, see if they've got a comic book shop, and maybe try to, you know, visit with the owner or manager or something like that, and just kind of see how long they've been in business and, you know, what drew them to comics.
Yeah, definitely. And I say all the time that going into Heroic, since I, you know, that's my home shop and will always be now, even after we move away, that it's like going into my own bat cave. You know, it's my thing. And I as a comic book fan, as a nerd, you know, I take ownership in that. And there is something so special and so unique about every shop. You would think that every shop would be the same, but no, it's not. And I found that out. I found that out really quick. And it made me fall in love with superheroes. It made me fall in love with comics and all that stuff all over again. I love it.
And it's one of those things, some of the nicest people, some of the most helpful people that you'll ever find, you know, jockey a desk or a counter or something like that in a comic book shop. I mean, that's just that's how it is. And you had a real nice experience. I remember you telling me when you and Sierra first went there into Heroic Adventures, and I believe you met Drew right away, first day, correct?
Yeah, Drew, the manager of the store. You know, we met the first day, and we, you know, I kind of like a relationship with the comic shop guys. It's as weird as that sounds. I mean, it's like it really becomes a friendship kind of thing. And you know, you want to go in there and hang out with the guys. You know, you want to see them and talk to them about comics or movies or whatever it is. You know, but yeah, we met Drew and the guys, and just immediately right there, thought, man, these are cool guys, and they're passionate about comic books. They're passionate about the nerd culture, and they're actually people that are okay with it. You know, that's one thing. Sometimes it stinks. Is some people aren't okay with liking comics and stuff, or they like them, but they don't want to act like it. But at the shop, it's like, wow, I feel at home. You know, I can be myself. You know, I mean,
it's amazing.
It sounds over the top, but it really is like that.
It's amazing how far we've come in. You know, since the time I was in high school, where you know, like you get the guys on the fringe who are the ones playing Magic the Gathering, or you see maybe one Batman T-shirt or Superman T-shirt, all, you know, from one kid. But now it's so ingrained. I think a lot of that, of course, due to, you know, Hollywood's involvement. But now it's such a part of culture that, well, classic example, Salem, which is, you know, my hometown now, and certainly you have plenty of knowledge because you're from this area. You worked in Salem for plenty of years. Salem got rocked last week by tragedy in a car wreck that took a teenager's life, a 19-year-old who I knew personally, as he was taking his younger brother to school. Dense fog. They got hit on the way to school by a garbage truck. And the younger brother, who's in a hospital in St. Louis, Missouri right now, is a huge Superman fan. So you see a lot of those Facebook profile picture is now becoming the Superman logo, and it's a, you know, pray for Weston, or, you know, staying strong, something like that. You had the Marion County Sheriff's Department over the weekend got together and took a picture on the courthouse step, and everybody's wearing a Superman t-shirt because one little kid liked Superman. You've got guys like Robert Downey Jr., who don't have to be the super nice guys that they are, but they're presenting a young boy with kind of, the best word that I can use to describe it is a cyborg arm. Mm-hmm. You've got this overwhelming sense of community, and though it's, you know, these are good people, and they'd probably do it even if, you know, even if Robert Downey Jr. didn't have that association with Iron Man, or if, you know, they went with a different kind of rallying sign, rallying symbol for Weston instead of these Superman t-shirts. You get that community, that rallying sign, and it just brings a lot of hope, which is weird because, as we learned in Man of Steel, the S isn't an S. It's a symbol for hope on his home planet. So it's so ingrained now in our culture.
Yeah, you said it right there, and that is exactly what I was thinking. When you think of, at least when I do, when I think of Superman, or I think of Batman, or I think of Green Arrow, or, you know, all these superheroes, hope comes to mind because we as human beings want to find hope. We want to hold on to hope, and hope's a beautiful thing. And thankfully, we have these superheroes and these stories to show us hope and to guide us and to give us all this hope. And it's just that is the one word I would say to anybody if they ask me about comic books or superheroes is hope. And yeah, I mean, you hit it on the nose there, especially with the tragic situation that's happening in Salem. It's awesome to see that people are grabbing onto Superman and that symbol and that hope. And it's a beautiful thing.
I'll never forget, and I'm getting into a personal anecdote that doesn't necessarily need to be shared, except for the tie-in that it involves my Green Lantern tattoo. And that was, you know, the older boy, Wyatt, who was driving, it's my understanding that his side of the vehicle was struck by the garbage truck, and he was killed in the accident. And folks, if you're listening, I assure you I'm not trying to, like, raise listenership or subscriptions by sharing this personal touching story. I knew this kid. I worked for the radio station as a sports director. He was playing high school baseball. I would be covering the team, but hanging out in the dugout, keeping the book, you know, high-fiving with the guys, cheering them on, you know, even from that journalistic standpoint, because, you know, a small town journalism, I mean, you can still be a bit of a homer. And that's what I was. And these kids, they loved seeing that tattoo, that Green Lantern tattoo. I don't think that they drew strength from it. I'm not crazy enough to, you know, speculate that. But they just thought it was great, and Wyatt was one of them. And he's like, come on, Mahochko, lift up the sleeve. So it's little things like that, you know, that I take with me, because it could have been any tattoo. You know, it could have been, I don't know what, it could have been, you know, like a rose with, I love my mom or something like that, or, you know, crazy, but it was a Green Lantern tattoo, and the kids thought that was cool, or at least humored me and thought that I was a weirdo when my back was turned. That's fine too. But there's something about these symbols that, like, I, you know, hope. I don't know. We're getting a little too sentimental. I think we need to crack some more jokes, and I don't know. Go ahead.
No, I mean, we're definitely getting sentimental, but I mean, that's the thing though. And I mean, veering it to comics and to superheroes, and there is a certain power about logos, and especially in the superhero world. And I think, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of people that aren't even superhero fans per se, they know the logos, and they know, I mean, pretty much what they represent. You know, I mean, obviously Batman and Superman, the out of all of them, just because they're what I would say the big two. But, you know, I don't know. There's something definitely special about logos.
And to their credit, be it DC, Marvel, etc., as much of it, you know, logo and familiarity with pop culture, things like that, but they've done a really good job of branding, you know, getting those logos out there, as much as McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Windows and Apple. I mean, things like that, they're more than just symbols. I mean, on the business side, if you're looking at it from the corporate side, and I try not to, but they are brands that generate revenue. So, there's a lot of stock, be it financial or more for us, for the community that enjoys the product, more of a sentimental, you know, stock in it. Although certainly we've sank plenty of dollars into, you know, reading and following our favorite characters.
Well, and one thing I also, you know, one last point I was going to say was, in the brokenness, in the broken world that we live in, it's amazing that DC, Marvel, you know, IDW, Boom, whatever, that they're able to not tarnish these symbols for all this time. You know, that they've always held up to what they stand for, and they've held up to what they are, and that, in my mind, is a really cool and strong thing.
So, I never hesitated once on this show to thank and acknowledge the people who helped get me back into comics as an adult. So, in that same vein, I'm going to pat myself on the back and you know, thank me or acknowledge me for kind of being a bit of a catalyst, because I remember we were having a conversation one day. You popped in the radio station and I was working, you know, at as the afternoon jock at the time, the PM drive talent on the local the radio guy. Station. Yeah, that guy. And the job was never particularly difficult, and you know, so if I'm speaking out of turn, you know, tell me to shut up, but we had an opportunity, or at least I did. I would voice track, pre-record most of my breaks, and then I'd sit there and read comics for 4 hours. And it was in one of those. I mean, you came in and you're like, "Oh man, comics!" And we started talking about it, and I lent you some, and which is a big part of the, you know, what comic friends do is they share, and that's how, you know, stories, titles, characters, passions, you know, develop.
Well, no, I mean, pat yourself on the back, right? Really, because I remember vividly a few instances where you had some comics in the studio, and I hadn't, you know, until, like I said earlier, until I hadn't seen those comic books from my dad in forever, you know, and to see comics again, it was just a really cool kind of revelation, and it went back to my childhood, reminded me that these were a part of my life at some point. Why not get back in? And thankfully, when we moved where we're at now, school, there was a shop, Heroic, right down the line and a mile away from where we're at. So, I definitely give you a lot of credit in that, because it rehashed my love. And something you said, too, about, you know, trading them with friends and that kind of thing, is it's weird, because I've only been reading comics like heavily now for the last year and a half of my life, and I'm getting to the point now where, you know, my professor at school, I'm a creative writing minor, and we were talking about comic books, and tomorrow I'm taking him a comic book to share it with him because he hasn't read it, and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's just funny how that works, because there really is a sense of you want to share these stories and you want to share these books, and it's just kind of crazy how that works.
I've always been, for a guy who likes to, like, be on the giving end of the sharing, probably more than on the receiving end. I like, for if I hand you a book, I want you to have the same experience and the same emotions and get the same you know, feelings out of the story that I got. And it's so tough, because, you know, be it the art or be it the writing or something like that, is so subjective, but that's definitely what I want, you know, when I can hand it. I remember Flashpoint being one that I shared with a buddy of mine, and I was so eager for him to have a chance to read it so that we could talk about it, and I'm like, oh man, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And so that sharing, I mean, I've listened to other more famous podcasts where they talk about, you know, that's how stories got circulated back in the 50s and 60s when you take a bag or a wagon of, comics around the neighborhood and everybody, kind of like sharing books in prison, where, all right, I'll have them this week and, pass it to the next guy in the next cell next week type of thing. That's how stories got circulated. Now everything's a little bit more readily available. So for me as the sharer, I just want there to be able to, my friend, whomever I'm sharing with, to come away with that same kind of feeling that I got while reading a particular title.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I'm finding with that, for me personally, a lot of independent type books, not necessarily the superhero books, but I mean those as well. But for me, from Image Comics and IDW, like they emit or his writing, evokes certain emotions. And as some buddies of mine, I'm like, I want to read this and sit on. I want you to have that for not only a talking point then in conversation when we're hanging out, but because we all have and we all feel certain ways and all that. So it is really cool to have that connection, even if it's a long distance friend or something. Everybody can connect with stories. And I still really firmly believe that's why comic books are still out there, that they're still being published. And can you imagine for a second, a comic book with just really no story at all? It was just the art. I can't imagine.
I'm reminded I go back to the 90s in a time where art was more prevalent than, it was the art that drove the sales more so than the story. But, you've always got to have a story. I think that if you've got amazing art, sometimes you can, that can help boost underwhelming writing, and vice versa. If you have amazing writing, then that can, boost a lackluster, art. And then sometimes you get those stories, those story arcs, those trade paperbacks, those one-offs, whatever, where the writing is top-notch, the art is there, and it just becomes a glorious thing to behold.
Well, that's and one series come to mind, and that's the new Batman stuff from Snyder and Capullo. It's like I don't know if you had a chance to read any of that stuff yet.
I've read most of it, I think.
Yeah, Zero Year was great. Just a quick plug for Batman Zero Year. If you get a chance to read that, even if you've not read anything previous, listeners, you need to get on that because it's really, really good stuff. But no, that's the situation there with their books. And now moving into Endgame, and I believe it ends next month, but the writing is so strong and the artwork is so strong that it's just obvious those guys were meant to work together on this book, And it's a really glorious and really cool thing to know that and to share those books then with somebody that maybe is a Batman fan, but just knows Batman from the movies or, Batman from a few of the novels that are out there, like Nightfall. It's there's such an awesome world there with comic books, and man, you're missing out if you don't search for those and you don't find those.
The beauty of comics too is that there really is something for everyone. And if you're not big on the capes and the masks and the heroes and things like that, there are a lot of other titles out there that might be of interest to you. And Matt, this is where I'm going to hit you up and ask you what you're reading, because I see your pictures that you share on Facebook all the time. And it seems like you're reading, well, not only are you reading different stuff, but it all seems to be pretty good. So what are you reading this week?
Okay, so this week, and yeah, I'm posting these pictures and I'm spending way too much money, but that's okay.
Wait, aren't you supposed to be a broke college kid?
Well, true, yes, but and I do act like one most of the time.
Fair
but,
enough,
when
enough.
You get that extra 20 bucks or something, yeah, at least I go to the shop and buy a trade. But
I would too.
I think, of course, come on. I think the main thing I'm reading this week so far has been, I've been really getting into Jeff Lemire. I don't know if you're really familiar with him or not.
A little bit here and there. If yeah, I remember correctly,
called Sweet Tooth, which I haven't read, but that's like his most famous one.
I haven't read it yet. Didn't he write Justice League Dark?
You know, I think so.
I'm on it.
He did do something with a Justice League. I'm pretty sure it was Justice League Dark. And I believe, and don't quote me on this, but I believe that he worked on the Green Arrow, some Green Arrow stuff too. I could be way off there, but I'm pretty sure he worked on some Green Arrow stuff. But I've been reading a lot of his I guess they can't really call it self-published because it's through Image, but he's written a book called The Underwater Welder. I've been reading that this week, and it is a fantastic book. And the cool thing about Jeff Lemire is he not only writes his stuff, but he draws it too. So there's like a certain beauty. I imagine doing both. I'm reading The Underwater Welder, and I'm also reading Batman Endgame. Just read Batman Part 3. Very good. I'm reading a series called Birthright. Copperhead's another one from Joshua Williamson. He's a new writer out there. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. He wrote Nailbiter as well.
See, the downside to being as so far behind as I am is that I'm trying to catch up before I jump into any uncharted waters, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too. There's so many, and like you said earlier, there's a comic book for everybody, because there really is. There's so many books out there. There's so many great stories out there and really unique stories that if you aren't caught up, you know, and you see something cool on the shelf and you pick it up, then you're going to get even more behind.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely important to get caught up.
Had to.
I mean, yeah.
I had to do the research because I had to know, and I wanted to make sure that I was, A, not speaking incorrectly, and B, not losing my mind. Jeff Lemire took over the writing duties on the new 52 Justice League Dark with issue number 9. So he has done some JLD, as it's called. I don't know who calls it that, but somebody does, apparently.
Yeah, I knew he did. I knew he did some with Justice League. I wasn't sure, which I haven't got to read Justice League Dark.
I've heard
really good things about it.
I've read the first two trade paperbacks, and I enjoyed it. I've branched out in my new 52 stuff. I mean, some of the stuff that people who know me would be like, you were reading that, but I was reading Brian Azzarello's Wonder Woman. Went, of course, to the Lantern titles because that's, you know, where I kind of got my start. But Justice League, Batman, Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, New Guardians, and Red Lanterns. Hello, what was that?
Not sure. Not sure what that was. Sorry about that. I don't know.
Hey, this is live recorded radio, and we're not editing anything.
No, I mean, hey, you never know what's going to happen. I apologize for that.
That's all right.
People won't stop calling me. I'm just that popular, I guess.
I believe it.
So,
So back on track and go. He's done some things. I've enjoyed what I've read of the new 52. My pocketbook, and I say this just on behalf of my pocketbook and my wallet and my wife's happiness. When some of these titles end, because I believe that, you know, like New Guardians and Green Lantern Corps and maybe even Red Lanterns are all ending, then that's going to be less money coming out of my wallet every month. But I will miss it. I'm glad that some of my staples, you know, I'm still reading Flash, and I'll have Batman, and I've been reading some more Marvel stuff here as of late, so don't worry, Twilight Comics, you're still going to get plenty of my money.
Well, that's the struggle, though. That's the great struggle buying comics. It's like, I know for me, I have... Well, at one point, I had 20 books I was grabbing on any given Wednesday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, when you think 20 books, $4 a book, $3 a book, which pricing is amazing still, for, in my opinion, but, I mean, that's another topic for another day. But, you know, when you're buying 20 books on a Wednesday, you finally realize, okay, I got to figure out of these 20 books I'm buying, which ones are the ones that I'm really, really enjoying. You know,
I've had to make those cuts too.
I think everybody does. I mean, it's just the way it is. And I know now, I mean, there were some books that I wanted to read, you know, 6-7 months ago that are now a trade. And the great deal that Image does. You know, their first trade of any book is $10. I mean, it's like waiting for that now and spending $10 on six issues. Okay, I'm in, you know.
What, now you mentioned as you're going back to school, minoring in creative writing and majoring, because I know you're very active in filmmaking. Is that your major now?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, you know, mass communication is now starting to branch from just radio and TV now to freelance, not even journalism, but to freelance filmmaking and all these things. So the classes are now turning, saying, okay, you can be a freelance journalist, you can do news stories, or you can go shoot short films. And that's the route that I'm going, just because I want to be creative in that way, you know, and I'm not much of a news reader or writer
I was going to say, you and I both had that similar radio background where sometimes you've got to read the new news and
exactly.
I completely understand why you would go the filmmaking route, and I've seen some of your stuff, man. It's cool. Do you take any influence from like the comics, as far as maybe if you see a frame in a comic, you're like, I kind of like the way that looks. Do you try to emulate that in a book, or do you just kind of all work out of your head? Do you storyboard that kind of looks like a rough comic book idea? And of course, this is all leading up to the comic that you're working on. We'll get to that in a minute. But when you're filmmaking, explain to me the process, because I've never done filmmaking.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the tie-in with comics would be not necessarily the what we're seeing in the panels, but how it's written. You know, like how Scott Snyder's writing Batman. I think about kind of some of the arcs he's doing and some of the twists and subplots and all this stuff. So, yeah, with filmmaking, it's one of those things. And thankfully, my friend Zach, who's on Pop Culture, and Sierra, who's on Pop Culture. I'm lucky in the sense that all three of us on all the stuff that I work on, we all kind of collaborate together and we all have different ideas. And, it's really a blessing for me, because doing it by yourself is not an easy task. And honestly, I don't necessarily do it by the book by any means. I kind of do my own thing, and I think that's okay. And I think it works. But I would definitely say some influences from comics would be the writing. And also, I know he didn't do any comic books, but Alfred Hitchcock had a very cool way of looking at filmmaking. And I think a lot of people, a lot of the time, want a certain film to be, you know, perfect and want it to be everything. And that's just not going to happen. And I think the little flaws and I think the little things in a story that don't make sense are good. And make a film, a short film, even better. And I think a lot of people would argue that against that, and that's fine, you know. But I think the little imperfections in a short film is, and I don't want to say this word again, but the beauty of it, you know, in a lot of ways.
Did I see where you had just shared via social media that you recently wrapped it on filming a short film, or what can you tell me about that? It seems like it was relatively recent.
Yeah. We shot a short film over my spring break, which was last week. We shot it a few days, and it's a simple concept. Actually, what I wanted to do originally didn't work out, and we're doing it for our next film now, which will come out next month. And that seems to how it always works. Your first idea doesn't always come out best. But yeah, we just won. I just posted it on Vimeo and Facebook and all that stuff. And it's a full 4-minute short. It's the most violent thing I've ever done, which is interesting because I don't like violent horror movies or anything like that. But I wanted to shoot one just to see what the experience would be like. And to say that I got creeped out on my own work is an understatement. I got to the point where sitting there at 1 o'clock in the morning editing it, I had to turn it off because it was starting to bother me too much.
No, so, Sierra, you got to keep the light on.
No, that is true. I definitely slept on the couch with the lights on. So, and there's no jokes there at all.
And you had the happiest like cartoon imaginable playing on TV.
the Powerpuff Girls were on. So
now that is a good pull, sir, for your cartooning, because I don't care who you are, Powerpuff Girls. Rocking. I mean, that was good story.
Johnny Bravo. Come on.
Those were good stories. I mean, the art or the animation was what it was. I mean, it's styled in a particular way, but those were decent stories that I think hold up. I mean, I haven't gone back recently that I'm going to acknowledge and admit publicly and watched Powerpuff Girls. But I mean, they were. It wouldn't be my first choice. Like if I'm flipping through channels, you know, as a 13, well, what year did Powerpuff Girls come out? Was it late 90s?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. That's a good question, because I remember watching them. I mean, I wasn't necessarily a kid, but I was a lot younger than I am now. It was probably the late 90s.
So I'd be older than 13. Man, they had six seasons. So 98 looks like it might have started. 98 to 2005. Wow. All right, so there I'm closer to 18. But you know, if I'm flipping through, I'm like, okay, I'll watch it for a few minutes. Keep flipping. If I don't find anything better, I'm gonna watch Powerpuff Girls because I don't care. I just
exactly.
Don't
care. Yeah. Not to mention the big Powerpuff Girl poster you have in your living room. We won't talk about that.
Hey, that's autographed. All right, Blossom, Buttercup, and Bubbles all autographed that. Okay, I don't need your I don't need your attitude, sir.
See, the thing is, if I could get a poster that was autographed like that, I would legitimately have that on my wall.
On the opposite side of the wall, staring at them is Mojo Jojo. That's a fact. plotting for when he can break free of his two-dimensional prison, his two-dimensional Bastille.
So it evens out.
I think I'm getting a little carried away. That's
all right.
So you've taken your mind and you're not taking it. I mean, you're taking it with you everywhere you go, obviously, but you're creating film, but you're also creating comics. And tell me about that, because that's when, not that I didn't want to visit with you on the podcast before that, but when you told me that you were working with previous Nerds United guests from Stash Publishing, I definitely, you know, piqued my interest. And I'm like, well, I got to find out about this project. So what can you tell me about your comic book creating that you're currently doing?
Yeah, so let me start from the beginning. It's not too long a story. So
that's all right. Take your time.
Cool. Going to the school, and the counselor sits down and says, okay, you got a minor in something. Right. So I'm like, what do I minor in? Because there's only really a select few things that I'm into, really. I'm not, you know, a 3-4-layer person. I have the things I'm into, and that's it, you know. But she said, well, here's some options, and then here's creative writing. And I stopped. And I thought, you know what? I love writing. Sierra always tells me that I'm an amazing paper writer. I can write papers. I wrote a 12-page paper in 45 minutes one day and got in on it, you know.
Things
like that.
What was the paper on, though?
Actually, a book in the Bible.
Okay. So subject material. It wasn't Eastern civilization and the feuding Chinese dynasties.
Well, I would have totally bombed that. Yeah.
I had a paper.
I can't build myself up too much.
All right, carry on.
Yeah. So I chose creative writing, and, you know, we were going to the comic book shop a lot, and I talked to Drew one day, and I said, we were just talking about writing, and I found out that he was a writer, and that he had put out a book.
Ginormous.
Called Ginormous, yeah.
See, now, Matt, if you would have listened to the first, you know, early episodes of Nerds United, you would have known that.
Well, I'll tell you what, as soon as I get off the phone here, I will do that.
All right. I promise. All right.
So we were talking about that, and then I said, oh, cool, you know, and I was talking to him about, well, where do you get it published? And he said, well, he was part of a, part of Stash Publishing, and he told me a lot about it and stuff, and I didn't really even think about it. A couple weeks later, I went in there and I was telling him I was working on some stuff. There's a couple of books ideas that I got that I've written an issue of so far, and things that I haven't told anybody about. You know, it's kind of one of those things. I'm just sitting at the computer writing, and hopefully one day we'll put it out there. You know, and you know, so he knew I was a writer. Was into that stuff. So, and then a few weeks after that, he asked me, he said, would you be interested in writing this comic strip called Apocalypse?
Yes, yes. Nerds United listeners, the diehards know about Apocalypse. Continue.
Yeah, so he asked me, would I write, you know, a few scripts for, you know, a few strips of that. And I said, well, yeah. I had never had an opportunity to write for anybody, let alone something that was going to be used in down the line for a bigger collection of comic strips. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. Immediately jumped on that. And a few more weeks passed by, gave me some information, you know, told me what the comic strip was, established the characters, all that stuff. And I wrote the first strip, and it's being inked, and I don't know if it's being printed yet, but it's drawn up, it's being colored and all that stuff right now. And I, you know, I can't wait for that moment of seeing something that is out of nowhere, you know, just in my own brain, that I wrote down a script real quick and in a couple of days and sent it off, and to see that in fruition, I can't imagine. I can't imagine seeing it. So I'm really excited about it, but it's going, it's called Apocalypse, and I'm not exactly sure when it's going to come out. I'm sure in a couple of months or so, but I know that on their Facebook page, they update it weekly with the latest comic strip. And keep in mind too, Greg, it's one of those things that a lot of writers are getting an opportunity to work on it. So it's going to be a really cool thing.
Now, definitely. Apocalypse, I know it started out as, you know, a comic strip in a newspaper, I think in the Alton area. Is it still going that route, or are they kind of saving this for more of a printed collection book?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't have the answer for that, but I do know that it's going in the books for sure, mm-hmm. and I know they're doing that here eventually. But I don't know. I don't know if it's still being printed in the newspaper or not.
I bet Drew would know.
Oh, I'm sure he would. I'm sure he would. That guy knows a lot.
Well, very. I'm excited for that because, you know, I don't know, idealistic or something like that, but I like, you know, when people's dreams come true, and that's like a small baby dream on the way to a much bigger dream. I think that that might be waiting inside you just to blossom and show itself. This is getting weird.
No. What I was going to say was, though, in all honesty, though, it's really, it's crazy how things can come together like that. You know,
all because you decided to go back to school, if you think about it.
Well, yeah, all to go back to school. You bring in comics a couple years ago into the studio, you know, seeing that leading to coming to the shop, going to school, finding out that creative writing was a cool minor, find out that I actually like writing. It's just, it's crazy how that works. And I would say to anybody that if you really have a passion for something, if you're really into something, Don't let anybody tell you that you're not going to make enough money doing it, or you're not going to enjoy doing it. You know, just do it. And I have a bigger dream of writing some books one day. I mean, my ultimate goal is to have the book I'm writing now for Image Comics, pitch it to them down the line, and you know, it might fail, but still working at it and getting opportunities and all this stuff. So it's just crazy how things can happen like that, and comic books such a cool medium for it to happen.
And they're always looking for something new, something unique, something that stands out a little bit. So obviously, sir, we in the Nerddome wish you all the best of luck in your creative writing endeavors.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I really do appreciate that, and hopefully I can come back on here a year from now and say, hey, I got a full book done, and
yeah,
you know. That'd be awesome, but you never know. And that's That's all right.
One of the other things, well, one of our other common interests, and something that I know you're equally passionate about, because you have a podcast regarding it right here on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, jitterymonkey.com, available on iTunes, is video games and your show Gamer. One of the things I wanted to visit with you about, because my gaming days are pretty well all but over. I've got a PS4 that I use for Blu-ray and Netflix and the WWE Network. I do play WWE 2K15 on occasion, but this coming June, I am looking forward to, and I think you are as well, the finale of the Batman Arkham series when Arkham Knight hits stores, or now due to now the benefit, if you will, of downloading the game directly. I mean, you can download it straight to your hard drive, but have you played all of the other Arkham games?
Oh, yeah, of course. Actually, the first one had been out for months before I even touched it on the 360 back in the day. And then I finally did, and I was just, my mouth was on the floor, just like, I can't believe I feel like Batman. I'm him. My dreams are coming true.
It's one of those that really brings out the detective part, which I think we don't necessarily always see in the movies, but we really get to that detective part in the video game. Now, granted, it's a detective with high-tech equipment and Alfred in the Batcave, you know, feeding him info. But, you know, still, I like how they play up the detective part of it. I loved Arkham Asylum to the point where I went and got Arkham City, and I liked it, and I finished those two. For whatever reason, Arkham Origins, I wanted to play and I wanted to like more, but I never did. I know that you know, Black Mask is in there, which I think Black Mask is a fascinating character and really one of those who is underrated as far as Batman villains go. What can you tell me about Arkham Origins, and with Arkham Knight on the horizon, is that something that I need to pick up and play a little bit more to enjoy? I know it was a different studio than Rocksteady that did Arkham Origins, so I'm kind of wondering if I even need to go back and play that one to appreciate Arkham Knight.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Origins was actually my favorite of the series, and a lot of people would argue that with me till the time. But and that's okay. That's okay. But the thing that Origins had were boss battles with a lot of characters that you don't normally come across in any Batman platform. Kind of like, you know, the Black Mask. You don't see much of his character in things. And so Origins did that very well. And the gameplay was basically the same as the two previous games. Not much has changed there. But what my argument for the new one is it's going to offers so much more to the player to be Batman. I mean, just the mere idea of being able to drive around the Batmobile in Gotham to me is just crazy. And just that alone is a selling point for $60 in my opinion. And to actually visit and travel on the streets of Gotham and things like that are going to be really cool. But yeah, graphic fidelity too with this new game on the new systems, PS4 and Xbox One, it's going to be nuts. It's going to look brilliant. And if you're a Batman fan, if you're a comic book fan, if you're a superhero fan, this new game is the one to go for. Now, interesting tidbit about it, Greg, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but this is the first Batman game that has a mature rating.
I did know that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of backlash and a lot of speculation on that. And they really haven't come out and said necessarily why it's mature, other than the fact that, from what we understand, is some of the language. But I think what we're going to find is, and this is, again, all speculation and opinion at my point, but I think we're going to see a much darker version of Batman than we have in games and even in film. I think it's going to be more dark than the Batman the Nolan movies. I really do.
If it is in fact, and by my understanding, it is the final Batman Arkham game that they're making, then there has to there has to be an ending. And either, you know, in my mind, either, you know, something horrible and unseen and unlikely happens to Batman, or he just goes on a rampage and starts putting, you know, the rogue villains 6 feet under. I don't know.
Yeah, and no, in saying that too, it's interesting where they're going to take it. And honestly, that goes back to comics too, with like Endgame and stuff. Where's Snyder going to take Batman? You know, because I mean, they had Death of Wolverine here back
September
5 or 6 months ago. Yeah, right. September. And could they do that to Batman? I mean, they can. Would they want to? And obviously you could kill Bruce Wayne or Batman in the games and not in the comics because it's a totally separate medium. But is that a legitimate option?
And
I don't know.
To that point, that kind of leads us in ever so gently, ever so perfectly, if you will, to our next topic, which is after Convergence. Anybody who's, you know, been on social media, been online, really, you know, been watching TV, because there was at least one TV news outlet, media, whatever, that covered the June solicitations for DC are out, and they include a slew of new costumes for some of our favorite characters, including Wonder Woman, Superman, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Flash, and Batman. And the unique thing about Batman is that it almost looks like a giant robot.
Yeah.
So does that mean that, like, Batman is no more? Did he transfer his consciousness into a robot? Who knows?
Well, no, here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if Gotham and the world built in these books are the changing things. So he has to have this suit, per se, to even survive in the environment. I'm wondering if that's the direction they're going to go with it. I mean, I have no clue at all. But that, yeah, it's interesting. And me, I'm a Batman fanatic. I mean, he's my favorite hero, always will be, and love everything about the character. I am skeptical, but at the same time, it's kind of cool seeing something new. I think why it's such a big deal too, Greg, is like, how's the saying go?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Which, yeah, I can see that, but doggone it, we need something new, and I don't think it's gonna, I don't think it's gonna last too long. I think they're building this thing up. It's going to be around for a few months, and then we're going to see Batman kind of back. I don't know. We'll see.
One of the things that I wanted to visit with you about, because it has been percolating, you know, outside of our, you know, comic book community, is Superman's new costume, if you will. And I don't even know if you can call it a costume, because as we mentioned, there were 40 Marion County Sheriff's Department officials on the steps of the courthouse here, sporting a Superman t-shirt. But according to reports and images that have been released by Warner Brothers DC, Superman's new gimmick, his new getup, whatever, jeans, boots, and oddly enough, a Superman t-shirt. Kind of a short, short buzz cut hairdo. I don't want to sound like an old timer, but that's not my Superman.
Well, I almost wonder if they're trying to appeal to a younger audience, I guess you could say. I don't necessarily know how, but
the odd part about that theory, and I'm not discrediting you. I'm not saying that you're wrong or anything like that. But he had something on his knuckles that resembled brass knuckles with spikes on them, and they looked to be dripping blood. So I'm not sure if appealing to the younger audience is the right theory.
You know, I don't know. Honestly, here's what I think. Here's what I think is going on. I think, and like I said, I could be way off, but I really think that there is a lot more to this than what they're saying. I think that we're going to see I think there's going to be a legitimate reason why their looks are changing. And I think once we see these stories and we see these arcs, then we're going to realize, okay, this is what they're doing with it. Because I think now it's like, what, really? What, why, you know?
I understand completely.
I think there's going to be a lot more to the world, to the scripts, to these things that just the general audience, we're just not seeing.
And you know, the mass consuming individuals that we are, all we have to go by are pictures. So, you know, and people who know what I do for a living, I sell cars. Well, very rarely do I sell a car based on a picture. You know, it's let me get in, let me drive it. You know, obviously those are things that you expect. So I think you're right. I think a lot of people might be rushing to conclusions regarding, you know, what these pictures have shown. And as you said, everything in comic books is temporary, you know? I mean, look how many times they were supposed to, you know, there were supposed to be two individuals who were never allowed to come back from the dead. One was Bucky Barnes. We know that didn't happen. Or, you know, that he came back, obviously, with Winter Soldier. Yeah. And the other was Uncle Ben. And now, granted, it was kind of a bit of a rub because it was a parallel universe, Uncle Ben. But, yeah, he came back. So they are, I mean, everything changes. Everything is temporary in comic books, which is one of the fascinating and also maddening things about the medium.
Oh, definitely. Well, you know, it's one thing, like with the New 52, before they started the New 52, say they killed Batman off, right, and he had been gone for months, but then the New 52 started and he was back. Okay, that makes sense because they're starting a brand, I mean, they're starting fresh, they're starting a brand new whatever you want to call it, thing, you know. But
continuity?
Yeah, continuity, yeah. They're starting a brand new continuity. So it makes sense in that aspect. It just bothers me whenever they kill somebody and then they realize, oh, crap, you know, we need them. We need them back, you know, and it's the same continuity, same world that they've built. And that's when it bugs me. And it is crazy how that's really the only medium that they can do that with. And I think people are so used to it now that they don't think twice about it. I mean, think about some characters that they've killed off, and I can't really sit here and name one in, you know, specifically, but think of one that they've killed off and they've never come back. That's a lot more impactful, a lot more lasting than killing Wolverine, and we all know that he's going to be back again here eventually.
Well, you know? I know that, was it Deadpool himself in the book saying something like that he was going to die soon? And this is, in recent memory. So some point, I think this spring, Deadpool is supposed to die, which then you have a similar situation like you had with Wolverine, because they're both obviously two individuals with healing factor. I drove, you know, the hour plus to Twilight Comics every week to get the four issues of Death of Wolverine. And I thought the story, the ending was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, yes, 100%.
And the art was the background art on my tablet for the longest time. But what, I mean, I look at that from the comic side of it, and I'm like, and I'm not going to spoil the death, you know, how it ended for anybody, but as I look at that and as I'm reading them, I said, okay, crap, I don't know how he comes back from that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know either. And of course, when they do finally have him come back, and he will, it's going to be even that much more impactful in that way, you know, because, no spoilers, but how in the world, how are they going to do it, you know?
And so one of the things that intrigued me was the follow-up series, if you will, the sequel series being The Wolverines. And I have not read that, but I want to, and I'll probably be picking up in trade. But that's, you know, something of, because now you have these people with somewhat similar, you know, abilities to a point. I think Sabretooth was on the cover. You had Wolverine's son. You had Lady Deathstrike. And I want to say even Mystique, but don't hold me on that. But they were all these, you know, people from his past who, not that they were trying to take up the Wolverine mantle or anything like that, but, you know, how do they cope now without, be it their friend slash loved one or nemesis, you know, not in the picture? So that's why it intrigues me about Wolverines. So folks, if you know what's going on there, keep it to yourself, because I want to read it for myself. So,
well, and something else is, I say, Sierra is a huge Nightcrawler fan. She reads all the Nightcrawler books when they come out, and exactly. He's a really cool character, by the way.
He is. I read Nightcrawler, well, the newest ones, 1 and 2, I think. Just a character that I feel like I could read more of. Like Colossus is another X-Men that I'd like to read more of.
Oh, yeah. You know, Sierra's actually tweeted Todd Knock. He's the artist in Nightcrawler, and they've had conversations over Twitter a few times within about last month, and his artwork is fantastic as well, and it really brings into it. But what I was going to say was that the death of Wolverine was really impacted with him. They even had, you know, a funeral type thing in one of the books and stuff. So that's one of the coolest things about comics, though, is in like the DC world or the Marvel world, whichever one you're in, if something happens somewhere, it affects everybody else in some way. And can you imagine, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, can you imagine sitting in an editing room trying to figure out all these books they got going? How does one impact one? How does somebody impact something else? Can you imagine going through all that?
No. And even to that point, I mean, when New 52 started and I picked up Justice League and, you know, Batman and Detective Comics and The Dark Knight and the Green Lantern titles, and I'm looking at these and I'm like, this doesn't make a lick of sense. Because some of them restarted, like Justice League restarted. Some of them picked up where they left off in the old universe. So it was very, I don't say poorly handled, poorly done. I would never be so brash as to question, you know, the people who I continue to give money to. But I just thought that from that standpoint, you know, there are two different storylines going in the DC side. So I'm with you, though, and that would be a tough meeting to be in, as far as, all right, well, we need to reference this somehow in a panel on page 14. Let's write in Wolverine's name. That'll cover it for a month.
Yeah. Well, and I really enjoyed your episode about comics for beginners, or, you know, beginning in comics, that kind of thing.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that episode, and it's something that I'm passionate about too, being pretty much a new comic book reader. But that is my big, I wouldn't say even complaint, because I don't want to ever complain about anything the comic book industry is doing, because I love it all. But it's something that just really irks me, and that is, I would have to make sure and follow the majority of the characters right from the beginning. Otherwise, I'm going to have no clue what's going on in certain books ever until they start a new arc. And to me, that's the most frustrating thing. And that's why I have been reading a lot of Image books, because its story is not necessarily about a created character. It's a character that they've created. It's easier to jump in. And I would say for beginners in comics, that's a good way to start, because you're not going to get lost. You know, it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating.
That is the tough part. So I guess the easiest kind of catch-all answer for where would we start, you know, if we're new to comics, Batman. Just start with Batman.
Yeah. I was going to say, I knew you were going to say that. It's either Batman or there is no starting point. Just jump in.
That's right. Speaking of Batman, and we're running, I don't want to say we're running low on time, because there's never a time limit, but it is getting late, and I'm an old, tired man. But one of the things that I wanted to touch on, since it's been in the news here in the past week, and we're just talking about Batman, Batman's nemesis is?
Well, the Joker.
Okay, all right. I was hoping that there wouldn't be that long of a pause, but since you didn't know that I was waiting for you to respond, then we'll overlay.
No, that's my excuse.
Batman's
right when you said that, I was going through all the villains. I don't know why. The Joker's obviously the one. But come on, Greg. There's Scarecrow. There's Bane. I mean, we can go all day here.
Yeah. Fine.
Hush. Don't set me up like that, all right?
Batman's nemesis is the Joker. And one of the greatest stories in Batman's, you know, canon, in his entire, whatever you want to call it, is The Killing Joke. And Alan Moore wrote it, I think, in the late 80s, second half of the 80s, I believe. And I'm not going to look it up because I'm talking now, and I only do research when Matt's talking. But that was an iconic story, in that that was the story that Batgirl, a.k.a. Barbara Gordon, got shot and paralyzed. Commissioner Gordon was... You've read The Killing Joke, I'm guessing, right? This is not spoilers for you.
No.
Okay.
No spoilers.
Just
for me.
Make sure. By the way, spoiler alert, if you haven't read this almost 30-year-old comic book, Barbara Gordon gets shot and paralyzed. Detective Gordon, or Commissioner Gordon, or whatever rank he is in the GCPD at the time, is kidnapped and taken to an amusement park, and Batman has to go find him. There, it is implied, although never outright said, that something else, something even more nefarious than being shot, happened to Barbara Gordon, and the Joker had some pictures. Now, why am I bringing all of this up? Because a variant cover, and we got to specify variant and stress that part, but a variant cover set for Batgirl, and I want to say it's 31, but don't hold me to that, has been pulled at the artist's request, Batgirl 41, excuse me, at the artist's request for June, I believe was when it was going to be released. Now, it was a variant cover for Batgirl number 41. The artist's name, Rafael Albuquerque. It looks like Albuquerque, like New Mexico. Bugs Bunny's not heading there, so I'm not worried about it. But anyway, it is The Killing Joke style Joker having captured or looking like he was going to kidnap and possibly torture Batgirl. The reason that it has been pulled at the artist's request is because that some individuals on the internet found it to be, I don't want to say offensive, but triggering, maybe of their own past, and I don't know these people, so I'm just making kind of a general statement of, you know, the implied, I guess we'll just say inappropriateness, or what's the word I'm looking for? The implied sexual assault,
yeah,
that may have taken place.
Innuendo.
Right, yeah. So they were up in arms, and the people who were coming down, the comic book fans who were coming down in support of the variant cover. Again, it's a variant, so you have to buy it separate. I mean, if I go to my comic book shop and I say, you know, give me Batgirl 41, they're going to give me the basic cover, you know, regular cover that's $3.99 that everybody gets. But this was a variant cover, a little bit more pricey. That has been pulled, again, at the artist's request because of the, I don't want to say backlash, but because of the protests of the internet. And a hashtag, I don't know what the hashtag was on Twitter, but Matt, what are your thoughts on, now, you saw the picture and you know the Killing Joke story. I've never been in a position where something like this picture could trigger any emotional, you know, trauma for me, and I'm not minimalizing that because I know people who have been through that type of abuse. But for something that's not going to be handed out to everybody, you're not going to see it on every street corner, things like that. I mean, is that a win for the internet, or is it a loss for, you know, the artist and for the fans who might have wanted that homage of The Killing Joke?
Well, I got plenty of things to say, but I'll limit it. I think people are way too, I don't even know what the word would be, sensitive, or way too, sensitive to this stuff, in the sense that, just think if their passions lied somewhere else, if they were so passionate about helping people in need or helping other things instead of what a comic book cover looks like. You know, I mean, that might sound crazy, but I think it's ridiculous, in my opinion. There's so much art out there, and I mean, we see this kind of stuff in film all the time. We see this kind of stuff. We even see this stuff in primetime television now. And I'm not by no means saying, oh, well, this is good. You know, I support this kind of behavior, by no means. But here's the thing. It would be one thing if Batman was the one making these actions, just from a comic book sense. It'd be one thing if Batman was doing this stuff. It's the Joker. We know who the Joker is. We know his motivations. We know he's crazy. We know these things. And for him to do something like this isn't out of the scope of his character, per se. And I just think people are so sensitive to everything now, or so vocal about everything now, that that it's almost taken away the right of the artist. It's almost taken away the right of the writer. And again, I don't want to sit here and say that I support even the idea of it, because I don't. But to take that away from them, it isn't a good thing. And I just hope, well, I don't hope, I know that this is going to start a long line of problems down the line for when an artist wants to do something specific with a cover, with a book. We're going to see a lot more of this, is basically what I'm trying to say. And it's a real shame.
It's weird. And I'm not, it's weird what people will react to, because you can have, it didn't seem like it was that long ago, a year ago, maybe something like that, where DC had the variant covers of the Bombshells, you know, and like the pin, yeah, or the, yeah, pinups or whatever it was. And that's okay. And that's stereotyping to a point. And I think that that's just as damaging. And again, this is coming from, you know, straight white guy perspective who knows nothing. So, you know, everybody needs to take that with a grain of salt. But I think that's just as damaging to maybe a different psyche as this Joker Batgirl image was to those who have experienced this particular trauma. I think that it was best handled, and my understanding was that it was the supporters of the artist or of the picture were coming out and threatening those who would have liked to have seen it, you know, be canceled. And it was my understanding that it's because of that. Like, there were reports that the artist was being threatened, and those have been debunked and said, you know, that's not the case. I think that it was best handled that the artist went to the publisher and said, you know what, let's just not to appease them, but, you know, kind of to make amends or show that we're not heartless, or however he worded it, you know, let's go ahead and scrap that, you know, idea. And he would have had the most to, I don't want to say most of the game, but he had the most to lose, because it was his time and effort, you know, spent creating that cover. So I agree with you in a sense that, you know, now that kind of a precedent has been set, and hopefully it doesn't lead to a windfall of other, you know, stifling of artistic vision. But as you said, it has that, you know, strong potential to do just that. So it's a very touchy subject.
Yeah. I mean, we live in a dark world, and there's a lot of terrible things all around us. And I think entertainment in a lot of ways glorifies some of that stuff, and it's frustrating. But in this specific situation, I mean, from what I know of Batgirl and Barbara Gordon as a character, and again, these are all characters, you know. It's like, from what I know, she's always had a weird relationship with the Joker. She's always struggled, even after the Killing Joke. It's been written in every once in a while in Batgirl books and stuff that she has memories of that situation because it was so powerful. So it makes the characters who they are, and to have a cover like this just continues that story. And I think the thing is too, Greg, it's like, you can, just because something's bad and just because something is a terrible, I mean, you can still, and again, I'm speaking all just from a comic book perspective, we don't know where this issue's going. She could find peace through this. Maybe that's what it was saying. Maybe, I mean, who knows at this point, you know?
Because it was a variant, it might have had 0.0 relation to the actual story involved. I think it was done as an homage to that, you know, classic story arc, The Killing Joke. But yeah, it is a pivotal point in Batgirl's character, in Barbara Gordon's character. And when I read The Killing Joke for the first time, I didn't read that, you know, sexual assault type of, you know, aspect into it. I read it into, you know, she got shot and she was laying there injured, bleeding, whatever. Maybe I got to go back and reread it and look for these things. But I think a lot of times people also look for a way to be offended so that they can, you know, carry on their crusade. The thing about it is, like in all other medium, being it, you know, film, television, you know, things like that, if you don't like it, you don't have to watch it, buy it, etc. And that still allows people. I mean, there's plenty of things that I don't like, but I'm not out there creating hashtags and saying, you know, let's do away with Twilight. Believe me, I'd like to, but nobody's going to listen to me because I'm, you know, white guy. I'm relatively, you know, I'm a marshmallow. I'm not going to offend. Nobody is offended by me unless they are. Scrap that. I offend a lot of people, but on purpose, and usually because they deserve it. You know, nobody is worried about offending me, and I don't get offended very easily. So, you know what I'm saying? People.
Oh no, 100%. And I go back to that too. I mean, in the sense that I don't like a lot of violent things. I don't like horror. You know, and that's why there's a lot of comics that I would love. I think the story would be cool, but I don't like it. It doesn't offend me. I just don't want to read it, and that's fine. I don't have to. But there's somebody else that it doesn't bother them. It doesn't trigger anything. It doesn't affect them, and they can read it, and that's fine. And that's the beauty of free speech, and that's the beauty of comic book writing and comic books in general. And it all goes back to there's comic books for everybody.
It's a much bigger discussion than we have time for here, but it goes into, by wanting everybody else to be more tolerant, we have to restrict what everybody can see, you know, type of thing. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, anyway, Matt, you've got a lot of things going on. You've got a lot of irons in the fire and you wear many hats. Popped culture. Gamer, what else are you doing that you know, people that you can plug, that people can, you know, find you?
Well, I've been throwing around this idea, and this is the first time I've really mentioned it in public per se, but I've considered writing a story that I'm going to release online by chapter each week. I think it'd be kind of a cool idea. Not a comic book per se. The story I think would be comic book-esque and that could definitely be turned into a comic book. But I'm going to be starting a blog here, I would say within the next month or two. And I'll pass that information along to you, Greg, once I do it. But I'm going to write a story, and each Friday or Saturday, I'm going to post the next chapter. And I want to do that for about 20 chapters, like 20 weeks, and just see if I get any response from it. And I think it'd be kind of a cool project and something fun for me. So really that. And as you mentioned, the podcast, we been trying to do that as much. It's been hard keeping up with school and stuff, so I haven't been able to do Gamer as often as I'd like, but I'm trying my best on that. And yeah, just keep trying to watch short films and be on the lookout for that short story, and hopefully one of these days I'll get that comic book published.
I agree, and that would all be good. Is there a place you mentioned, I'm thinking I'm pronouncing right, Vimeo? Is that where they can go and watch the short films that you've already put out?
Yeah, so go to vimeo.com, and you know what, the URL is escaping me. I'm gonna have to look, but I post all my stuff on Vimeo because it's more of a professional site over YouTube, in the sense that a lot of people go to Vimeo to find professional things. So I post on there a lot. But it's actually just vimeo.com/Matthew Horst. So it's that easy.
That is easy.
Yeah. Easy stuff.
And
I would also say to check out my blog, which that will be the one that I'll be updating soon. But it's the Matt Horst blog, matthorst.tumblr. That's TUMBLR.com.
You are on Vimeo and Tumblr. You are as well on Twitter and Facebook. You are a renaissance man of social media, sir.
Hey, in this day and age, if you want to get your stuff out there in any way, even over email now, it's like you got to be social media, you got to have a blog, you got to do all this stuff, and I love it. I think it's cool.
Do you Snapchat as well?
You know, no, I've Good. Never downloaded Snapchat.
Surprisingly. I've heard too much bad stuff about it. Like, you know, it's hacked every other week and you know, all that other stuff. There's probably some archive, some database with everybody's Snapchat ever.
Oh yeah.
You know,
oh,
posted
yeah.
there.
Well,
so.
I always think about that with Instagram too. I know they're probably got all those pictures somewhere, but I'm not going to post anything that I wouldn't want people to see anyway. You know
right.
what I'm saying? So it's like,
Right. So we'll have all the links on the site on this post. So make sure that you check out jitterymonkey.com for all the links so you can see Matt's short films and his blog, and follow him on Twitter, and follow Jittery Monkey on Twitter at Jittery Monkey. That is monkey with a U, not monkey with an O. You follow Nerds United at Nerds United Show. My personal one is more sports related, so you probably don't want to. Well, I guess you can follow that one too. Why not? At TheHooch36. And remember that if we can get my previous guest, Mr. J. Peter Onitz, to 250 Twitter followers, he will give Nerds United a complete set of Magicians Must Die, the card game comic. No, it's the comic on written and printed on a deck of cards. He will give us all four issues, that's four sets, and give them away. So you got to help me help Jay get to 250 Twitter followers. You got a week to do that. Let's make it happen so we can get Magicians Must Die into one of your hands, lucky listeners. And that is a tremendous conversation with Jay, a wonderful conversation with Matt, and so happy that I know talented and creative people, and that I'm meeting talented and creative people. That is an unexpected, unforeseen bonus of doing Nerds United. One of the things that you can do if you are in Southern Illinois, Northern Kentucky, Southern Indiana, or Ohio, basically if you are in range that you've ever been to Holiday World, Santa Claus, Indiana, I'm coming your direction on June 27th, Saturday. I will be at Evansville at the Insane Inflatable 5K. And you can join me by going to the link that's on the Jittery Monkey Facebook page, which, by the way, is facebook.com/jitterymonkey. I think that's what it is, and I should probably verify that, but you can click that link, check out all the obstacles that they're going to have at the 5K. It's a fun run, so it's not timed, but you can run with me, Kevin Huntsberger, who hosts my 1-2-3 Cents. He's running in it as well. Join the Jittery Monkey Runners team, and we'll have a lot of fun, and we'll take it over, and we'll have a little, I don't know, a little in competition. Whoever has the best time, if everybody's keeping time, maybe we'll give them a Jittery Monkey set of prizes. Who knows? But you got to be there. I'd love to see y'all hang out. We'll grab a shake or something unhealthy after we run, because that's what you do after you. Matt, isn't that what you do after you run? Is you celebrate with something unhealthy?
Well, I don't run, so I walk.
You just
usually
go to.
When I. Funny thing is, I walk. I can walk 3 or 4 miles to school on any given summer day, and I'm usually ready for something nice to drink, like a Gatorade or something. Yeah, so no, I don't run. I don't run.
You'll just skip right to the celebrate with something unhealthy, right?
I'm the guy with the camera at the finish line. That's
yes.
The thing.
You can see me triumphantly finish in the back of the pack.
But, hey, there. You know, Greg.
But finish nonetheless.
We could actually do a video on this. We could do a video on this.
Oh, a GoPro just, or just, what?
Well, I mean, we can make it a mini documentary about you guys running, and hey, you never know.
We should do that. Can you be at my house 3 mornings a week at 6 o'clock for a training montage?
Never mind.
Matt, it has been great catching up with you and visiting with you, and I'm so excited for all the projects that you have going on. I'm looking forward to seeing the short film that I haven't seen over at your Vimeo.com/Matthew Horst. So, again, thanks so much for taking some time out on this weeknight, a school night for some of us, a work night for others. And take care, buddy. We'll have you on the show again soon.
Hey, you know, Greg, thanks a lot for having me on, and we definitely need to do this again soon.
I definitely think it's going to happen because I feel like we've just scratched the surface. We didn't even get to all the movies, and 2015 is going to be crazy for movies. So later in the summer, we'll have a follow-up with movies we've seen and movies we can't wait to see.
Well, you know, it's bad when my wife comes in here, points at the clock, and is like, really? Really? So we could just go on forever.
I just looked at the clock myself, and I can't believe it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I know.
is McDonald's still open? Can I still get a Shamrock Shake? It's yeah. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, even though you're hearing this on Thursday, we're recording this St. Paddy's Day night. So Shamrock Shake, if they're open. If not, I'm just going to go home and drown my sorrows in ice-cold milk because that's all I got at the house.
get green food color. You'll never know the difference.
Ooh. Green milk. Uh-huh. I had green milk once by accident. It was horrible. I was sick for a week.
You know what's really weird? Did you have that green ketchup when it came out like 3 or 4 years ago?
Nope, because it would taste funny. I wasn't going to go there.
No, I know. I literally couldn't eat it. Yeah. Okay.
We're off topic. This is crazy. We got to go. Matt, thanks again, sir, and enjoy. You can tell Sierra, rest assured, I'm giving you back to her now. It's okay.
Thank you. Thank you. She'll thank you.
I'm sure. All right, that's Matthew Horst. I'm Greg Mahochko. This is Nerds United, episode 38, and we will see you on down the road.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.